You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, April 29th, 2018.
We look at a lot of different pollutants that can cause premature death. Ozone and particulate matter both can shorten life, literally.
Monroe and Brown County have some of the best air quality in the state, according to the American Lung Association. In today's feature report, we'll hear about air pollution across the state and here in Monroe and Brown counties. That's coming up later in the program.
Primary elections are just around the corner on May 8th. In today's Voices in the Street, we ask Bloomington residents if they voted, for whom they voted, and why. That's coming up on Voices in the Street. But first, your daily headlines.
The Indiana Department of Child Services has gone several million dollars over budget this fiscal year. With 2 months left in the fiscal year 2018, the DCS has exceeded its budget by $284 million. Lawmakers had previously granted the agency $125 million more than the fiscal year before. Another $324 million was identified for excess spending if needed. This came mostly from the Family and Social Services Administration and Medicaid reserves. Most of the excess funds have been used as well. The Department of Child Services spending was brought about by a rapidly growing child welfare system. From 2012 to October of 2017, the number of abused and neglected children in the system increased by more than 80%, partially brought on by the opioid epidemic. The number of family case managers hasn't kept up. Over the same five-year period, the agency has increased the number of case managers by about 60%. The DCS is also under public scrutiny after the former director, Mary Beth Bonaventura, resigned in December. In her public resignation letter to Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, she accused the governor's office of, quote, slashing our budget in ways that all but ensure children will die, end quote. Other severe problems she listed included damaged community relations, outdated technology, and reduced staffing. Democrats in the Indiana legislature attempted to bring up the crisis in DCS during this year's short session.
The special session of the legislature will convene on May 14th. Governor Holcomb's office issued a proclamation on Friday ordering the special session of the state legislature. Under the state's constitution, the governor may call a special session of the legislature if he believes the public welfare demands it. On the governor's agenda are four bills regarding school safety and federal compliance issues. Those bills were left on the state house floor when Republican lawmakers failed to bring them up during this year's short legislative session. This year's legislative session came to a chaotic and argumentative close in March, and Republican lawmakers failed to bring up the governor's legislative priorities. House Bill 1315 addresses financial crisis at Gary and Muncie Community School Corporations. Both school corporations are millions of dollars in debt. The bill would allow the state to bail out the Gary and Muncie School Corporations in exchange for state control over those school corporations' governance. House Bill 1230 addresses bullying and cyberbullying in schools and would require schools to have an emergency safety plan in place. Two other bills would fix state and federal compliance issues. Governor Holcomb's office says he's hoping the legislature will address the four bills on May 14th and that the special session will last only a day. Some Republican and Democratic lawmakers have agreed to forego their pay during the special session in order to mitigate its overall cost to taxpayers.
Administrators at the City of Bloomington are hoping to fund a long list of unmet needs with money left over from fiscal year 2017. But City Council members were divided last night in their support of the proposed appropriations. According to Controller Jeff Underwood, the city has nearly $4 million in unspent funds from last year. Underwood brought forward a request to put $2 million of those reverted funds into a long list of unmet needs. That list includes diversity training for staff and renovations to the showers building HVAC system, among other things.
renovations at three of our fire stations, a market study on current housing stock and a development of estimated future needs, office supplies, equipment, and furniture, a follow-up review of our sanitation automation, vehicle and equipment replacement, additional materials for street repairs and maintenance, new and upgraded software for IT and other departments, additional funds for rental deposit assistance program, and
Underwood said another $200,000 would fund oversight for various city projects.
We have a number of large projects that we are getting ready to kick off in the Trades District, in Switchyard Park, in the Convention Center possibly, and the current hospital site, along with a number of trails, side paths, road projects, intersections, and gateway improvements. And one of the things that we heard as we talked with the department heads was the need for project management.
Many of the proposed appropriations were described generally without specific supporting documentation. City Council members Steve Volin and Isabel Piedmont Smith were the only members to ask Underwood for more specifics. For example, Volin asked Underwood for details of a $180,000 request for the Housing and Neighborhood Development Department. That was to include an affordable housing survey and grants for rental deposits.
I'm confused. Is that the grant related to affordable housing? You said 38,000 in neighborhood projects. I don't see any neighborhood projects here.
6,000 for the renters program, $50,000 for the affordable housing study, and 38,000 for the neighborhood projects.
Okay, that's $94,000. You're asking for 109.
Underwood said he'd have to review the numbers and get back to the council. Council member Isabel Piedmont Smith asked Underwood why funding for vehicle repair and replacement was not fully funded from the city's existing vehicle replacement fund. Underwood said before the recession, the city's sanitation, public works, and parks department had money designated for annual repair replacements. He'd like to return to that practice. In the meantime, the vehicle replacement fund only meets part of the city's needs. That's why he looks to reversions.
As I've said in the past, you know, we've really been working on this backlog of building maintenance, new projects, equipment and vehicles that have been extended far beyond their useful lives. And we've done a pretty good job of starting to narrow that down. Where we're still struggling and where we're still working on is getting back to an appropriate level of annual repair and replacements. We anticipate that that's about $3 to $5 million a year in revenues that we don't have.
In closing, both Volin and Piedmont Smith voiced disappointment in the lack of detailed supporting documentation. Volin said he could not support the appropriations until he received a fuller report. Piedmont Smith also asked for more documentation.
Yeah, I have to agree with Councilmember Volin. I mean, you have a list of the details of how the reversions in the various departments will be used. I don't see any reason why that shouldn't be shared with council, why it wasn't to begin with. So I look forward to seeing that.
In a straw poll with council members Rallo, Simmons, and Piedmont Smith passing on the vote, council members Granger, and Dorothy Granger, and Allison Choper were absent.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton is endorsing the group Concerned Scientists at IU. In a press release issued this morning, the mayor's office announced the endorsement of Concerned Scientists at IU after the group wrote a letter objecting to the repeal of the Clean Power Plan. Hamilton is also expected to submit a comment objecting to the Environmental Protection Agency's repeal of the 2015 law. Hamilton encourages residents to leave their own comments on the EPA's website. Concerned Scientists at IU is a nonpartisan group of 850 members, including scientists, students, and supporters of science from South Central Indiana. In their letter, the group argues, quote, "The proposed repeal of the Clean Power Plan is not justifiable in light of the strong scientific evidence on the contribution of fossil fuel combustion to Earth's global climate balance," unquote. City of Bloomington Communications Director Yael Cassander says Mayor Hamilton agrees with the organization's objection.
Mayor Hamilton believes that policy needs to be based on scientific evidence. And he endorses the fact that the group at IU, the Concerned Scientists, are supporting the federal government's use and incorporation of scientific evidence in the formation of policy.
The Clean Power Plan of 2015 was modeled after the landmark Clean Air Act of 1970. Cassander says the current EPA administration is trying to roll back on the Clear Air Act's protections by saying the legislation goes beyond its statutory rights. Hamilton's objection to the proposed repeal stands on the same position as his pledge in June of last year that the city of Bloomington will remain committed to the Paris Climate Agreement. Cassander says that although the nation officially withdrew from the Paris Climate Agreement last year, Hamilton is one of over 400 mayors across the country who have issued a formal statement supporting the agreement.
Mayor Hamilton pledged his support and the support of Bloomington for ongoing support for the Paris Climate Agreement, notwithstanding the national withdrawal. And many of cities across the country have done the same. About 400 mayors have pledged their ongoing support. And in fact, at the most recent Congress International Climate Treaty Conference in Europe last fall, a group was there called the We Are Still In group. So that's a movement of support for the Paris Treaty, notwithstanding the national withdrawal.
Sanders says the city of Bloomington believes in environmental protection, citing the 50-year-old Environmental Sustainability Commission and development of the city's first Sustainable Action Plan, which aims to identify strategies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
We have partnered with Siren, which is the Southern Indiana Renewable Energy Network, to solarize a lot of our city buildings, as well as more than 100 residences in just last year alone.
Cassander also says the city is exploring transportation alternatives, including a new fleet of bicycles, as part of the city's upcoming bike share program.
Tomorrow is Arbor Day, and the city of Bloomington is planting trees at public parks around the city. The city of Bloomington Community Relations Manager Julie Ramey says the city is celebrating Arbor Day along with its bicentennial this weekend.
Our urban forestry staff has planted a tree in Dunkirk Square on Kirkwood Avenue, so our Arbor Day ceremony is going to be a little delayed. We're going to recognize our Arbor Day tree at the Bicentennial Street Fair that takes place along Kirkwood Avenue this Sunday.
The city accepted tree donations by residents, many of which will be planted this weekend at Monroe County Community Schools.
We did receive grants and donations from the community to plant a tree at every MCCSC school. So we'll be planting a bicentennial tulip tree at every school, and there were trees donated for planting in several different parks, including Lower Cascades Park and Alcott Park. And those are bicentennial tulip trees that will be planted this spring if they're not in the ground already.
The trees will be tulip poplars, which are the Indiana state tree. Ramey says the city found a variety of tulip trees that will do particularly well in an urban environment. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slodegraff and Ben Neoff. Slodegraff Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slodegrafflegal.com. Slodegraff Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
A study from the American Lung Association looks at ozone and particulate matter across Indiana. That study found that air in Monroe and Brown counties is healthier than the rest of the state. WFHB correspondent Shuhan Chia brings us this report.
Monroe County has some of the best air quality in the country, according to a new report by the American Lung Association. The ALA's 2018 State of the Air Report found the air in the Monroe County area only had one day of what the association calls unhealthy air. The American Lung Association is a national respiratory nonprofit focusing on the issues regarding lung health and air quality. Each year, the association publishes its State of the Air Report, which is a report card for national air quality. Janice Nolan is the Assistant Vice President for National Policy for the American Lung Association. She says the State of the Air Report transfers the complicated numbers and statistics about air pollution in a community to an easily understandable report card.
People can know what the air quality where they live or where their family is like compared to what it should be in terms of where the best quality air is and also in terms of what it is has been in the past so that they can know how air quality is doing in their community. So we put together this report card that we have done now for 19 years to help people understand about air quality and be able to learn more about ways they can protect themselves and their families.
The report found in Indiana, the overall air quality is not very high. Nolan says Indiana has a lot of air pollution monitors across its counties. She says most of the air pollution in Indiana comes from particle pollution. That's molecules in the air like soot, smoke, and dust. Indianapolis ranked as the 21st most polluted city in the country for short-term particle pollution, and the 13th most polluted city in the country for year-round particle pollution.
We found that a lot of the counties in Indiana are also part of metropolitan areas where air pollution is a bigger issue. For example, Indianapolis, where ozone is a big issue, and other pollutants are big issues, as well as suburban areas outside of Chicago and outside of the Louisville area near Kentucky.
Nolan says the Monroe County area only has a particulate monitor. From the particle pollution aspect, she says Monroe County doing well. It only had one day with an unhealthy level of particle pollution between 2014 and 2016. Overall, Monroe County received a B in particle pollution air quality.
Bloomington was one of our cleanest cities in the country for several years. In our 2013, 14, and 15 reports, they were among the cleanest cities. In other words, had no days of unhealthy air. So having one is not too bad, but you've had better than that. We also look at year-round levels. So in Monroe County, we look at the measure of it, and you get a passing grade, as you have historically through that. It's actually the lowest it's been in Monroe County. So Bloomington is doing really well on particle pollution. It's now to 8.8 micrograms per cubic meter. The amount that there should be below is below 12, and so you're doing very well. And it's really shown good improvement over the last many years.
Nolan says that while Monroe County is doing well in the particulate matter in the air, it doesn't have an ozone monitor.
Ozone blows a long distance. One of the things we find is that ozone pollution can blow from far away. So you may be getting ozone pollution from Kentucky or Illinois or St. Louis that's blowing into Bloomington. It's just not being picked up because you don't have any monitors to find out whether you do have a problem or not.
Neighboring Brown County, which is considered part of Indianapolis metropolitan area, only has an ozone monitor. Brown County had 2 days of unhealthy levels of ozone pollution from 2014 to 2016. Overall, Brown County gets a B for ozone pollution. Nolan says Brown County just started monitoring ozone pollution, so the association doesn't have a good long-term trend about Brown County air quality. In general, Nolan says the air quality in the urban area of Indiana is worse than the rural area. That's not always the case, as agricultural and rural industry often show an inverse trend in other states. Nolan says air quality can affect people's health, quality of life, and economic success in several ways.
For example, people with asthma can have asthma attacks that put them in the hospital, make them miss work. People with cardiovascular problems can have heart attacks or stroke. We look at a lot of different pollutants that can cause premature death. Ozone and particulate matter both can shorten life, literally. We also find that these can affect things that range from causing lung cancer, like particle pollution can do, to impacting the birth weight of a newborn baby.
Nolan says children are born with a small percentage of lung development. up to 80% of a child's lung development occurs after they are born. She says air quality during a child's developmental period can affect lung function. Nolan says the historical nationwide trend of reducing emissions is helping to improve air quality.
Things like reducing emissions from coal-fired power plants, cleaning up emissions from gasoline, from cars and trucks, from diesel, those kinds of things nationwide are probably having the biggest impact on air quality and have improved air quality, especially when we're looking at a place like Bloomington that's benefiting from a lot of the reductions in the vehicles, the cleaner emissions from vehicles, cleaner emissions from power plants that would be blowing pollution into Bloomington, into the state of Indiana.
Those interested in finding out about the air quality of their community can go to the American Lung Association's website at thestateoftheair.org. The website provides air quality comparisons and county trends. For WFHB, I'm Chu Hanjie.
Support for FHB also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar header systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
With the May 8th primary election just around the corner, Voices in the Street asked Bloomington residents if they voted, who they voted for, and why.
I'm voting for Liz Watson. She represents my values, and I'm excited to have more female representation in our government, and certainly excited for a change in the direction that we're moving, especially at the congressional level. So, yeah.
Not yet, but I plan to vote early. I'll probably vote for the parties that reflect my personal opinions, I guess.
I know who's running, but I rarely vote in the primary. Kind of a waste of time. They've already decided who is going to be their representative, and so there's not so much point and lack of interest.
Dan Cannon. He has a really progressive platform that I am unused to seeing down here in southern Indiana, so I really like that.
I don't know any of the candidates. I just know I'm not going to vote Republican.
No, I don't. I really don't know exactly who's running, but I will know when I'm there.
In Bloomington, no. I wouldn't be ashamed of myself.
Being aware and exercising my civic duty.
Last year, I didn't really know what was being voted on, I guess, probably last primary. The primary is not as much as the big elections. No, I guess I just don't see much of it or something. I don't know. Just not as interested, I guess. Yep.
I've seen nothing but ads for Republicans. I don't vote Republican. I voted once Republican, and it was to try to get Luger in there versus Murdoch or whoever he was running against. But no, I haven't been paying much attention to the Democratic race.
Were you more aware last year than this year?
I always vote in the main elections. Always.
But the primary?
Primaries I have a tendency not to, yeah.
You never know from one day to the next who's going to be running, do you?
Nobody in particular. I mean, I usually vote, you know, the most liberal person possible, so I guess, you know, name like Liz Watson comes to mind, I guess, for Congress. And I'd have to really look at a ballot to see, you know, everybody else. But whoever's liberal Democrat, that's what I'll vote for. Or liberal independent. You know.
I vote straight Democratic ticket.
Every year?
Every year. Yeah, I have done more research on the candidates. So that does make that's important as well. But I do tend to vote straight ticket. I don't know. I voted early in the presidential election. I really don't see the need to, but I might if it's convenient.
Well, Republican. What do we got, a senator up? I don't even know.
Born it, dyed in the wool, Democrats.
No, actually, I don't like any of them. They just all seem like
used car salesmen to me.
Okay.
I mean, they're pretty bad.
Yeah.
Too much mudslinging, too many people, you know, just false accusations, digging up dirt. You know, let's get away from all that and start talking about the real stuff. So, yeah, I don't really like any of them.
I would vote for Chris Gall. I would vote for Lee Jones for council.
I have someone for clerk that's a friend of mine that I think would do a good job, and he was clerk before, or he was assistant some years before, from what I understand. And Jacob Franklin. But other than that, I haven't been following a whole lot of who's running. I see signs everywhere, but you know.
I'm definitely a supporter of Matt Schultz. He's phenomenal. I'm the chancellor at Ivy Tech, and he works for us. He's the program chair and does an amazing job. He's a veteran who's got tons of experience, and I can't think of anybody better than Matt Schultz for prosecutor.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McKieran, Chuhan Chia, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Chuhan Chia.
Voices in the Street was produced by Jenna Janikowski. Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Smajki, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.